Welcome to Africa in Transition, a CFR podcast discussing political and security developments across sub-Saharan Africa. My name is John Campbell. I'm the Ralph Bunch Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington. I am joined by Ned Dolby, a senior research analyst at the International Crisis Group, who is on the phone from Brussels. Welcome, Ned.
Thank you, John.
Today, we will be discussing the subject of a new ICG report, Double-Edged Sword, Vigilantes in African Counterinsurgencies, of which Ned was the lead contributor. Ned, could you start us off by briefly summarizing the purpose of the report, what you hope the report will do?
Yes, of course. Crisis Group is an international organization that aims to analyze the drivers of political crises and violent conflicts and propose ways to prevent and mitigate those conflicts. So within that lens, we recognize that when weak African states are facing insurgencies, they were facing a dilemma. Often armed informal vigilante groups active in support of government forces against the insurgencies have repeatedly in the past and continue today to present a dilemma for them and their international partners, because on the one hand, they often help protect civilians from insurgents, and often thanks to their local knowledge, help state forces to lead more targeted and effective counterinsurgencies. But on the other hand, experiences from across sub-Saharan Africa, discovered through our field research, show that these informal groups tend to commit abuses against civilians and can widen or prolong conflict by attacking either ethnic or political rivals, and potentially in the long term undermining the authority of the central state. So it's a dilemma, hence the title of our report, Double-Edged Sword. And so with this report, we wanted to look at some case studies from across sub-Saharan Africa and try and pull out some lessons about how the governments and their international partners could navigate this dilemma, maximizing the usefulness of vigilantes while mitigating the risks.
So the context for the report is Crisis Group's overall concern with mitigation of conflict. Is that a fair way to put it?
That's right. Yeah. Wherever we can, we seek to mitigate, prevent, or resolve conflict.
And as your title says, vigilantes are a double-edged sword. On the one hand, they very often provide a degree of protection for local people. But on the other hand, they can ultimately become a challenge to state authority and can morph into something which is considerably more dysfunctional. Fair summary?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Now, also part of the context, it seems to me, and it seems to me this comes through very clearly in the report, is that the states involved are literally, without exception, extremely weak. They're weak states. They don't really have a monopoly on violence.
That's right. And in fact, it's one of the real nubs of the problem, because the weak states are those most likely to resort to using vigilantes because they can't counter insurgent forces on their own. But because of their weakness, they're also those most likely to lose control of the vigilante forces that they're using, hence resulting in serious human rights abuses. And as you say, the morphing of these groups either into ethnic militias with narrow agendas, which are often different from the original mandate of civilian protection, which they set out with.
Now, of the case studies that you discuss, the one that I am personally most familiar with and work on the most is Boko Haram in northeastern Nigeria. One of the interesting things there is that, in my view, of the four states that you discussed, Nigeria is the strongest. But that said, there's certain peculiarities of Nigerian policy that paradoxically weaken it in the northeast and make it more dependent on vigilantes. I'm speaking particularly of the longstanding policy not to station troops or police in areas where ethnically they come from. So, in other words, the military and the police operating in northeastern Nigeria traditionally have not been House of Speakers, have very often not even been Muslim, which means their links with the local population are quite weak.
Absolutely. And I think this is not just unique to northern Nigeria. Often national forces do come from other parts of the country. And in countries which are multi-ethnic, the communities that bear the brunt of insurgencies don't identify with the national forces. And in fact, a high degree of mistrust exists between them. So you can see why there are incentives for both sides, particularly for the state, to ally with local forces. They have this knowledge of local languages, of local territory, and of local culture. And our field research in northern Nigeria highlighted this, that the local vigilante forces, the civilian joint task force, had an acute sense of what was normal and what was abnormal.
Right.
So they were able to identify and help track down Boko Haram members. And I think, importantly too, vigilante forces like the civilian joint task force have a strong level of local legitimacy in the eyes of local communities, which national forces often don't. And that means that the local communities will often offer both material support to vigilantes and be ready to pass on intelligence that can help in counterinsurgency efforts. In fact, in the case of northern Nigeria, at the beginning of the insurgency, the civilian joint task force really grew out of a double threat. The first was Boko Haram, but the second one was collective punishment meted out by the security forces themselves.
I think that's a terribly important point. There's plenty of anecdotal evidence and even some polling data that indicates that ordinary people in northeastern Nigeria were often as frightened of the security forces as they were of Boko Haram.
Yeah, that's right.
There's also another dimension to this that I find really quite interesting, and that is the relationship between vigilantes and forces from other countries that may be cooperating with the host government. In northeastern Nigeria, it's Cameroon's Niger and Chad. But you also had in northeastern Nigeria something about which there's not a whole lot in the media, and that is the role of South African mercenaries at one particular point in the effort to dislodge Boko Haram from the territories that it had occupied.
Right. Again, that's not unique to Nigeria. I conducted field research in Sierra Leone last year, looking into the civil war there.
Yes.
The vigilante force there was known as the Kamajors. Again, a community defense militia which pre-existed the conflict, but which when the conflict broke out, developed and grew and was seen as an opportunity by the state, whose military was in disarray, to take the fight to the rebels. Because the army itself was in a poor state, at first it brought in executive outcomes,
yes,
a military company, to fight against the rebels, and they partnered with the Kamajors in the south and the east of the country, and they depended a great deal on the local intelligence of the Kamajors. Following their operations in the country, you also had regional forces under the banner of Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, that came in to support the government. In that case, it was predominantly Nigerian troops in Sierra Leone. And there, too, they also relied on the Kamajors, both as guides, but also as troops in the vanguard of military operations to put pressure, military pressure, on the rebels.
Now, that's very interesting. So, in Sierra Leone, you had overt, close cooperation between vigilantes, mercenaries, and troops from other states. Do I have that right?
That's right. Not at the same time. First of all, the executive outcomes were present, but then after that agreement ceased, the ECOWAS troops were brought in.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You also raise the very interesting question to me of what happens to vigilante groups when the conflict is over. Now, in the Niger Delta, the Nigerian government has pursued a policy called amnesty for those militants that were fighting against the government, which, amongst other elements, included fairly extensive payoffs. I have seen anecdotal reports that some of the CJTF in northeastern Nigeria are in effect saying, look, if you paid off people who were fighting against the government in the Delta, surely you should pay us as well, since we have been fighting for the government.
Absolutely. I've seen similar reports, and it's something that we're keen to point out in our report, that the many of the groups we look at feel betrayed by the governments that they're fighting for, because when the conflict dies down, they don't feel that they have been sufficiently rewarded and recognized for their efforts and for their sacrifices.
Yes.
Many CJTF have lost their lives. And so I think that leads to one of our critical recommendations, that early on in a conflict, as soon as it's clear that state governments are needing to rely on vigilante forces, that they have to begin planning for the demobilization, disarmament, and indeed the reintegration of vigilante forces into civilian life. And this has to be sufficiently generous to prevent that kind of ill feeling among both the vigilantes and the communities which they come from, which could embitter remote areas of the country.
Now, my impression from the report is that, in fact, there is far too little of that kind of advanced planning.
Yes. I think that when governments seek to ally with vigilante groups, it's really more of an ad hoc reaction when they recognize that the national forces on their own are not sufficiently strong enough to overcome the insurgent threat. Often, there may be pre-existing vigilante groups, but often they create during the conflict, and the government is really seizing on an opportunity. And so that kind of advanced planning doesn't happen.
My impression as well is that very often governments are reluctant to acknowledge, at least at first, that they are using vigilantes.
Yes, I think there's a question of pride as well among the state forces, which was certainly the case in northeastern Nigeria. There was some hesitation to ally with and to use the vigilantes because they considered security to be a matter for the official forces and not for local civilians. But only over time and as their usefulness became apparent and trust was established, then it became more overt and more open, this collaboration. And in fact, now one of the main advantages that the state finds in using them is that they can entrust vigilantes with holding territory recovered from Boko Haram while regular forces concentrate their efforts on offensive operations.
It's going to be interesting to see going forward exactly how that works out. You may have seen that a few weeks ago the Nigerian army announced that it was essentially adopting a strategy of fortified hamlets in parts of Borno State, which in effect concedes the countryside and the roads, at least after dark, to Boko Haram.
Yes. Time will tell how that strategy pans out.
Though it did not, it was no great success in Vietnam nor in Afghanistan.
I think it's interesting, while our report does focus on Africa, we do take account of the fact that the use of pro-government militias is not restricted to the African continent, noting that it's been, as you say, extensively in Afghanistan, where the Afghan local police was recruited locally to ensure, provide security locally. But that too had very negative consequences in terms of human rights abuses. Some of these lessons learned in the African context could well be applied elsewhere.
Absolutely. What is your thinking about the role that friendly states, such as in the case of Nigeria, the United Kingdom or the United States, is there a role that they can play in the reintegration of vigilante groups?
Yeah, I think just to zoom out briefly, I think that friendly partners should be aware of the kind of measures which African states need to take in order to limit the risks of using vigilantes. And I think that falls into three sort of main priorities. The first is to guard against vigilantes' mission creep, to prevent them expanding beyond limited objectives that fall within an overall counterinsurgency strategy, and especially preventing them from stepping into local governance roles, such as dispensing justice, which could see them entrench in the community. Second being to try to prevent abuses, and that means careful recruitment and vetting of potential vigilantes, and capping the number of vigilantes so that they don't become too many to manage. And that means close oversight and accountability mechanisms, both by national and local leaders, but also by the communities themselves. And thirdly, as I've already mentioned, that careful planning for demobilizing, disarming vigilantes and how to reintegrate them. And I think that friendly states, like the case of the UK and the US and Nigeria, can assist in all those aspects from an advisory point of view. And I think that that's a far wiser approach than trying to assist vigilantes directly, especially because if they do that, then they'll weaken the state's bargaining position vis-a-vis the vigilantes. And I think that that they can play an advisory role, but also they can bring their resources to bear for the non-kinetic, the non-violent aspects of the support, particularly in the demobilization and reintegration phases.
I think that's a particularly important point, that friendly states being involved directly with vigilantes paradoxically has the effect of undermining the state that ostensibly we're trying to assist.
That's right. Particularly on reintegration, then, one of the findings that I came across in Sierra Leone when I was there last year was that reintegration programs consisted of vocational training courses, which were in the first instance too short, just a matter of months, and in the second instance, not tailored to local market needs. Former Camajors were trained in trades of which there was no particular need in the places where they were living. So some more sophisticated thinking about apt and locally appropriate training would be very valuable.
Well, thank you very much, Ned. Now, the report, Double-Edged Sword, Vigilantes in African Counterinsurgencies, that is available on the ICG website. Is that correct?
That's right.
I hope those of us who are interested in peace, security, Africa, and so forth, I hope the report will be very widely read. I found it an extremely stimulating read. Thank you for being with us this morning. Look forward to being in touch with you again.
Thank you, John.